Dave Fanning
on 2FM.
Now, more than 90% of directing a picture is the right casting. That's what Martin Scorsese in the documentary called Casting By says. And as usual, of course, Marty would seem to be right. Can you imagine anybody else playing Forrest Gump other than Tom Hanks? Or someone who wasn't Morgan Freeman portraying Red in The Shawshank Redemption? Someone other than Jennifer Lawrence, maybe, as the Hunger Games Katniss Everdeen? Probably not. Of course, a big-name actor will draw an audience to a movie, but what's much more important is that the person cast in the role can deliver the character as they are meant to be, and even bring another level to what's already down in the pages of the script. But finding that talent is much harder than you'd think, and that's where the casting director comes in. Well, Marjorie Simkin, she's been casting movies in Hollywood for more years than she probably would care for me to mention, including Avatar, Erin Brockovich, Top Gun, Field of Dreams, 12 Monkeys, etc. And she joins me now. Welcome to the programme, Marjorie. How did you become a casting director, first of all? Is it a difficult job to get into, or you just slip into it?
Well, I'm old enough that there was a time to slip into it. I don't think that's true anymore. I didn't even know it was a job when I sort of fell into it. I was in New York and knew that I was interested in working in film, and someone called me up and asked me to, it was a film called King of the Gypsies, and I had to go into schools to find people that looked like Eric Roberts and Susan Sarandon for flashbacks when they were kids, and that started, and I sort of got hooked and found out that I had, for whatever reason, this gift for doing this crazy thing.
Well, then, hold on. What exactly do you do? I mean, besides going into gymnasiums, and besides walking the streets, and besides going to schools, having to find an Eric Roberts, or having to find a Susan Sarandon, what does a casting director have? I mean, like, how does it work? How much are directors or producers involved with your process, or are you basically left to your own devices with the instructions of what they want? This is what they want. I will fit somebody into that.
Well, like everything else, every other department head in on a film, we work with the director, and it's his or her vision, and we're there to support it, and I like to think augment it to some extent, given our talents and you know, our input. So you meet with the director, and then you do the whole process is hand in hand with the director, but you read the script, you meet with the director, you discuss ideas of how they see the characters, you say things that you think about a character, and then we go off and then we start presenting options. But I do think that in our presentation of different options, that's when our input really comes into play, because you obviously can't bring in every actor in the world for every role. That's not practical. So like an editor, or, you know, we're making suggestions. And I mean, I was really touched. I've done a lot of movies with Terry Gilliam, and he once said that I think of things before he thinks of them. And I like to think that means we're in sync. And so I know what he's going to respond to, and I make suggestions accordingly.
God, when I think of Terry Gilliam movies, you're in sync up there, the two of you alone, I can tell you.
Yeah.
Because he's out there. He's completely out there. Okay, look, if I mention names like Tom Cruise and Laura Dern and Kevin Bacon and Robert Downey Jr. and Johnny Depp and all these people that you have been there for, you're not ever looking for what I would call a movie star. You're simply looking for the best person for the role.
Well, that's the ideal. The reality in today's market is really a combination of both. I mean, I like to think sometimes at the beginning of a movie now, and that can be a studio movie or certainly absolutely during independence, where they are worried about marketing and selling a movie, you almost act as a mediator between the producers and the financiers and the filmmaker, saying, okay, here's the filmmaker's vision. Here are the options of actors that they think can get the movie financed. And then you discuss with the director how different options could or couldn't work. And you come up with a game plan and then try to get some of those actors. So all those elements come into play. I mean, the fantasy is, you know, we're just getting the greatest people for the parts. And that can be true when you get down to the smaller roles. But when you're dealing with those leads these days, you really have to factor that other element in. And I think that's why sometimes an audience will look at something and go, why the heck was that person in that tiny little part? Yeah. And frankly, that's how they got the money for the film.
Right, exactly. Yeah, right, yeah. But you make it look like it is always a collaborative effort, and you always say you have to kind of fit the director's vision and whatever happens to be. Is it ever just your blinking vision? And you say, look, let's forget about the director here. That guy's going to be great in that because I've read the script and that, and I will simply hand it all back to the director with the actor, and he better use this person.
Well, it is collaborative. It is ultimately they have to say yes, where I think what you're saying comes into play is that I'll see people that someone else doesn't know or that I really, really believe in, and everybody's going, yeah, but we really should get Tom Cruise. And I'm going, no, you really have to look at this guy. And then it's about convincing them that I'm right. I mean, I have to sell my ideas to them. And part of the craft of what I do is convincing them.
Right.
You know, so I remember on Top Gun, there was an amazing producer who's no longer with us named Don Simpson, and who worked with Jerry Bruckheimer.
Amazing being the opera. Sorry, but like,
yeah,
I've
amazing
read, I've read and the
all. Oh yeah, no, really an extraordinary guy, but brilliant, really brilliant. And when I wanted to bring in Tony Edwards for Goose in that part, the idea that they all had was a comedian. And they said, oh, it's the funny part, and so we need a comedian. And they were sort of, I'm Jewish, so I feel like I can say this. They kept slinging all these ideas of Jewish guys, and finally I screamed out, Jews don't fly, which I'm sure isn't true.
Hey.
But I said, the most important thing about this character is that you care when he dies. And the thing about Tony Edwards at the time is that he was incredibly sympathetic, and you were really going to care when he died. And that, I think, the thing I have to keep doing is reminding them what's important about each character, what is the key for each character in the script. So I'm there, I'm the touchstone, if you know what I mean.
Now, what about how you actually go for the people involved or get the people? Now, by the way, we're talking to Marjorie Simkin and we're talking about casting for movies. I presume those older days were the 8x10 catalogue, the shots that you get, and they'd send them in the post or whatever it happened to be, or by courier or whatever. I presume, like, the open casting calls as well was very important and all the rest. But right now, do you go internet-wise just to look up Breakdown Express, whatever it happens to be, and everything can be there, from headshots to little videos to things they do?
It is. We are almost paper-free in my office.
That's
now.
What I mean. It's so much easier or huger, bigger?
It's bigger.
Yeah.
You know, it's fantastic and overwhelming at the same time.
But exhausting. Yeah.
It is. It's because things come in from all over the world. And they come in digitally in all kinds of forms. I mean, I get emails constantly, obviously, from the agents. And where it used to be a phone call a day from each of them, it can now be 10 emails a day from them. You know, I have this idea, I have that idea. And, I mean, once I sent out a breakdown for a two-line part in Avatar. It was a two-day part, two lines. And within 4 hours, we had over 1,100 submissions from L.A. alone.
Mm.
Represented actors, not even unrepresented actors. So,
what part of the movie? Who was it? Who got it?
I don't even remember, and it probably wasn't in there in the end.
Yeah, right.
You know, but it just, for some reason, that one really stood out, because mostly I just sit there all night going through these internet submissions and spending hours looking at pictures.
I'm just thinking, like years ago, you'd see a movie and it was always like Gowns by Edith Head. Now, I don't really know much about Edith Head, but it's just so important. Everything was Gowns by Edith Head. In fact, there's a band who have an album out called Gowns by Edith Head, which
really?
I think is brilliant. Yeah. But also, for about 20 years, casting by Lynn Stallmaster. It was just a name. Who's Lynn Stallmaster, would you even know?
Lynn Stallmaster is a brilliant casting director who's now retired, and he was, first of all, I know.
What?
There you go. That's the information of the day.
Lynn Stallmaster is a he.
Lynn Stallmaster is very much a he, and he showed up at our award ceremony this year and got a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Hold on, award ceremony, a casting director's award ceremony. There is no Oscar for casting director.
No, there is not.
I presume, again, you're not necessarily...
We have a branch now, though.
Okay,
you have a branch.
Okay,
that
fine.
That happened this year.
Well, that's
a big deal for us.
No, I understand this, but like what I said earlier on about that you're not necessarily looking for movie stars, you're just looking for somebody who's right for the role. You're not necessarily looking for massive kudos, but the same token, with so many other categories within the Oscars and within the Academy, and you're a member of the Academy.
I am.
Yeah, well, do you not think there should be the best casting director award? No?
Well, it's certainly something that is much in discussion, as you can imagine. Look, we're just happy to have a seat at the table, finally, at the governor's table. We have three governors now, and we've been members. I've been a member for like 25 years, but we're members at large for a long time. And we applied on a number of occasions, and finally were granted branch status last year.
Whoa.
And, well, I mean, it is a big deal for us because what we're always trying to do is make sure people understand that, you know, elves don't have these actors appear suddenly on set, and that there is this job. And it's hard to explain because so much of what we do happens behind closed doors and has to be kept private for all kinds of reasons.
Well,
and what's great about Scorsese is he does acknowledge Ellen Lewis so much, who's his casting director, and her importance in his process. But a lot of them don't, you know, and they forget that we were there because we're there at the beginning. That's the other thing, too, I think. You know, everybody else is there till the end pretty much of the shoot, and obviously the post-production people long after. And we're there at the very beginning, and then we're gone. I mean, by the time the picture finishes shooting, I probably cast two other pictures.
Right, but like also when you do cast, are you casting everybody in terms of like, for instance, like if you do Beverly Hills Cop or Aaron Brockovich, which you've done, did you cast everybody in every
role?
Anyone
who speaks.
Now, Julia Roberts, say, in Aaron Brockovich, was known beforehand.
She was attached to project when I came on, because sometimes there's somebody, a star attached, and more before a studio will greenlight something, they get an actor attached, and sometimes they do that on their own, or sometimes we get brought in to work on that stuff.
And Eddie Murphy? Yeah.
No, Eddie, that's a longer, more complicated story. I mean, actually, Sylvester Stallone was the...
Really?
I'm sure you know this story.
No, I didn't know this.
So Sylvester Stallone was the star of Beverly Hills Cop. The character was called Axel Cobretti.
Right.
And I think that was the character's name. And Sly kept rewriting the script as he saw the vision. And Martin Brest, who was the director, had another idea. And it went on for a very long time. No, until about 4 weeks before we started shooting, we'd almost finished casting everything. We pretty much finished casting everything. And the sort of some things about the setup were different. And there was a disagreement, and he was replaced by Eddie, because Eddie was sort of popping out of Saturday Night Live at that point.
Yeah.
And I completely confess I had nothing to do with that, but it then did make me say, okay, we've cast all these people, and these people fit and these people don't, and so we would need to rework, you know, a bunch of...
Yeah. And have you ever been really surprised by somebody who came in to an audition for a part from you? I mean, as in somebody you weren't expecting or on paper shouldn't have blown you away, but they did.
I once said that some of the greatest theater I've ever seen happens in my office.
Yeah.
And now we record almost everything, but for a long time we didn't. And when I first met Kevin Costner for a film I did called Testament, he had just been cut out of The Big Chill. So I'd never seen him do anything. And he walked in the door and he just looked like this kind of not very interesting, frankly, good-looking guy.
By the way, he was the biggest thing in The Big Chill because they all came to his funeral. But he was never
in it. But he was never in it. But he was originally. Yeah. I guess there were some flashback sequences or something. And so his agent called up and said, there's this guy and he's really great. And I thought, you know, he's a cute guy. And all the girls in the office thought he was really, really cute. But I didn't expect. And he did this beautiful... beautiful scene about his child dying, and it's still some of the best work I've ever seen him do, actually.
And did you cast him in Field of Dreams?
He was then attached to Field of Dreams. I had cast him in Testament, and we knew each other. Now I'm disappointing you, right? But
I did.
But Robert Downey Jr. in a film I don't have credit on, I did put him into Less Than Zero. You know, I did know him from New York at the time, he came in and he was and is so freaking extraordinary. But that was a part that he was totally made for. And then Johnny Depp came in for that movie, too, and was not right for it. And so the next day when I got home from work, I got this panic phone call from Fox, and they had just fired the kid off 21 Jump Street and knew I was looking at a lot of kids.
The beginning of Johnny Depp.
And so I said, I didn't want to give them Robert. I didn't want to give them anybody that we actually might want to cast. And so I gave them Johnny because I didn't need him.
Jeepers, that's amazing. Because the funny thing is, like, look at Robert Downey Jr. now. Like, I mean, he is, in terms of just money at the box office, he's the biggest star in the world.
It's so fantastic. Yeah, like, I mean, it's so exciting to me. I know, but...
Have you been... Were you there for his madness of a career?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
No, we were all there for the whole sort of thing of it. And he's always been brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. You just couldn't... And in fact, I put him in a picture called Bowfinger.
Oh, yeah.
Where he actually replaced John
Stewart.
Steve
Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He replaced John Stewart. John Stewart was supposed to play the agent.
John Stewart, the Today Show.
Yeah, John Stewart.
Right.
Had acted in this little movie called Dancing with Architecture or something. And I had heard that he would be really good. We thought he would be really good for this. And then his schedule changed and he was unavailable. And I called around and Robert's agent said, what about Robert Downey? And he had just come out of rehab. And, you know, he's brilliant. And we knew he'd be brilliant in the movie. And he is brilliant in the movie. But nobody would insure him. So we took all the money we had for the character. And to his agent's credit, he said, look, he just has to show everyone that he can show up and work. And so he did it for scale.
Yeah.
And we took all the rest of the money and used it for the insurance for the 2 days.
Did you know?
And he was fantastic in the film. And I like to think was sort of the beginning of showing people he could do
stuff. He could do it.
You know, he could hang in there. And if you've never seen the movie, it's fantastic. And he's
fantastic. Yeah, of course I have. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, it's a funny movie. Yeah, it is indeed. Okay, now, I presume you love your job and everything that goes with it.
I do.
So in other words, like, I mean, you couldn't possibly see yourself doing what it was you were
what
doing.
What else could I do?
No,
I guess
no.
HR.
What's this you were doing at the beginning that you suddenly went for a friend's job and you decided to look for people on the street and you said you went around looking like a hooker, you used to say?
They told me you did your research. This is really, really embarrassing. I used to manage modern dance companies and then nonprofit theater companies. And I got tired of asking for money. So I thought I should do something else. And a friend came up with this job that I ended up doing on King of the Gypsies, looking for these kids.
Right.
And then I was working on a film called The Wanderers, where I essentially for a while on both The Wanderers and Fame did a version of location casting.
Right.
Where I was looking for real people in the streets of New York for these movies, which had, you know, sort of very particular needs. And I went to Little Italy because we were looking for Italian kids for, you know, kind of gang kids for The Wanderers. And so somebody told me to go to this one street in the village and I would walk up and down the street and sort of accost young men. And then I got asked to come into a sort of very large Italian man came and said, you know, come with me. And to this day, I can't believe I did it. And I walk into this room and the sort of don of the neighborhood was there and they wanted to know what I was doing because they thought I was a new hooker and I hadn't sort of signed in with them.
They wanted their 20%.
They wanted their 20%. But then once I told them what I was doing, they were incredibly, incredibly helpful and introduced me to dons in other neighborhoods around New York. So it was really helpful.
That's pretty good. All right. You didn't cast The Godfather after that, did you?
I didn't.
By the way, you've seen an awful lot of young actors go on to become like massive stars. Like, what is there such a thing as any kind of a secret to stardom? I mean, earlier on you said, like, you know, if you've got two lines, don't invest your whole life into it. Just do it and be natural or whatever. So is there any secret to stardom?
Talent. I mean, I think it's a combination of talent and determination, because I've certainly seen people with talent that haven't gone on. And there is a thing that you cannot create. You know, you can have talent and then invest in it. I mean, what Jennifer Lawrence has, I don't know how you quantify that. You can't create it. You can't study for it. You have it. I mean, she is a movie star, in my opinion. I would see her do any part she wasn't even right for. And the last couple of roles, you could argue, not Katniss, but the other thing, you know, that she wasn't perfect for, but...
Silver lining.
I mean, she was the wrong age. She was whatever. You're riveted by her. And it's like she, to me, is the throwback to the old movie stars of the 30s and the 40s.
Right.
I mean, it's fantastic to watch.
And
you know, there are people that walk in a room and you think they have the potential for that. And then it's luck of the draw. It's the parts that come up.
Of course.
I was hoping you'd say
the word luck. Luck is so important.
Luck is a factor.
The power of an actor to move an audience, does it begin with his or her power to make a casting director sit up in a busy office?
Sure. And the thing is, you can be seeing 35 people in a day and you're exhausted and you're thinking, I can't listen to this scene one more time. And somebody comes in and nails it.
Yeah.
And it's magical. It is the gift of my job. I can't tell you how thrilling it is to be woken up that way.
Yeah.
And it just shows. I mean, you look at 30 auditions and then later you can review them. You don't even need to. You just know it when you see it. And it's fantastic.
Well, listen, Marjorie Simkin, thank you very much indeed for talking with us. Just one final question. I have to throw in a really mean one here. What's it like working with James Cameron? What's he like? Seriously.
Seriously, he's brilliant.
Is he? I know he's brilliant.
He's brilliant, but that is so energizing, honestly. And I know he's demanding, and that makes you up your game. And, you know, he can be... He's never really been bad with me.
But by the way, like, I mean, after Titanic, he could do... The world was his oyster. He could do what he liked. So he does an even bigger thing, Avatar. Was it fun working on that?
It was so much fun because it was different. I mean, you know, the whole...
Because all the people who came in had to be blue and 7 foot tall.
Yeah, you know, it was really... You know, transferring them into that was really... No, we hadn't created the language at that point. So they had to come in and audition. And I had to know whether they could do the sounds and speak a language that hadn't been written yet.
So I
sort of came up with this system for that, and he was on board. He was always, he's smart enough to listen.
Right.
And I think the mistake that a lot of lesser filmmakers make is they think they know everything. And he and all the great filmmakers I've been lucky enough to work, and that's luck for me, to work with, are smart enough to listen to me and their other department heads and let us collaborate with them to help them make the best film possible. To me, is the difference between the greats and the non-greats.
And you have been lucky, if you'll pardon whatever, to have been working with the greats. It's always
I really have. I'm sorry I don't have a trashier Jim Cameron story.
I know. And they've been very lucky to work with you as well. And Marjorie Simkin, thanks a million for talking to us, Marjorie.
Thank you. This has really been fun.